Well, we're really glad to be back. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and I'm the host of the show. I'm also chairman of the board of Mage LLC, management consulting firm. I'm being flanked by my team. In the other room, we have my executive producer, Alex Dablofsky. We love Alex, and we have Chris Gerald on the board. His thumbs up for Chris. I want to thank everybody, and don't forget, if there's a topic of management or leadership that you're interested in, or business, you know, just Google Radio Entrepreneurs. You'll probably find it on our YouTube stories or on our website. So we are a big publisher of entrepreneurial content. Our next guest, and I don't want to goof this up, we're going to see if I can get it right, is Will Krause.
Yes, you nailed it.
Of Moody, Lynch, and Lieberson.
Moody, Lynn, and Lieberson.
Lynn and... Oh, it says Lynch. It's Lynn?
Yeah, Lynn.
Okay, that wasn't my fault. That was my producer's fault. And what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I'm here, I think, a little bit more as an ESG and sustainable investing evangelist than as a portfolio manager, which is my role at Moody, Lynn, and Lieberson. So I think there's a massive movement that's happening right now and an evolution of investing towards sustainability factors or non-financial factors. And including those in thought processes around and professional thought processes around investing.
Well, let me see if I get this right, because this is the first I've heard of this, and I could be a slow uptake. You're looking at investment opportunities for your clients in companies that are looking in environmental sustainability ways of making money.
Yeah, I think the history. Yes, that's a way to summarize
that was
it.
The Donald Duck version.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Let me give you a little bit of history. I think the history of the ESG. ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance, and that acronym really came from the fact that there are three areas that were historically focused on when people were trying to evaluate companies and think about non-financial factors that companies were exhibiting. So if you go back to the Vietnam War, the earliest iteration of this was that people didn't want to buy defense. Some investors didn't want to buy defense stocks, so they went to their investment managers and said, "Hey, I'd really like to exclude this group of stocks."
Did it really start there, or is
yeah,
that just that's modern?
That's era kind of started. And the Quakers are a group that had
you their
own.
Go back to the British French Wars.
I'm sure you could go back further and find examples.
And the Rothschilds, they invested in different sides of wars.
Yeah, but I think I go back only that far because that's when a few financial firms and pioneers really started to say, hey, this is something that we can build a business model off of. It's appealing to investors who are going to be slightly discerning about the traits that are exhibited by the companies that they're investing in.
The population is probably much more aware of it today.
That's what's really changed over time. Is you had pioneers that originally started thinking about some of these factors, and then but that was mostly exclusionary. You can own a large portfolio of stocks, but please don't own stocks that are defense related, or there are religious exclusions around abortion, or
companies that made napalm.
And there are certainly environmental ones. A lot of people, one of the most popular kind of segments of this area for a long time was not only fossil fuels and saying, I object to what oil companies are doing. Please don't own those. Right. And so that was phase one of the, and that's why the term ESG still sticks around, is because that's an easy way to identify a group of factors that are all very important to certain groups of people from almost a moral perspective. But what's happened recently over the last 10 or 15 years is now there are more data points being disclosed. There's sort of a disclosure revolution that's happening where companies are reporting more non-financial data points. And as those data points get reported more and more, those data points can be analyzed. And as those data points are analyzed, we're really at the crest of the wave in starting to prove that those data points are actually material to financial performance. And as materiality is proven, more and more asset management firms are saying, wait a second, we're focused so much on the financial disclosure items that exist out there, but those only account for, by some estimates, about 15% of corporate value. The other 85% is non-financial. And so what do you do with that, those intangible? How do you start to get your hands around those intangible metrics and those the intangible value that's locked up inside of a company? And really, that's where we are today. Is the industry is starting to grapple with the idea that that side of the ball is important.
I like it. I like what you're doing. It's hard not to be. For me, it's hard not to like it. But what led you to that path? Because that's not a traditional path for an investment manager guy.
Yeah. I grew up in equities research, and we had a few clients actually that were exclusionary in their ESG factors, and they demanded that we, as their asset managers, included those factors in our analysis.
But were you always socially oriented, or did you grow into it?
No, I've definitely grown into it. I've been.
So you're a convert.
I'm a convert. Yeah, and not that I was a non-believer before, but I think that there wasn't really a negative screening, as we call it, isn't that compelling. It has its place because I understand.
Earlier in my life, I'm getting sick of convincing people to eat shrimp versus chicken.
Yeah,
you want to do something useful with your skills.
It's good that people can say, I don't want to own this company or I don't want to own that company. But what really got me excited about this space is that we're now starting to make companies infiltrate the way that they think about running their businesses with social factors. And those may not be left or right. It's not about necessarily about what you believe. It's about best practices and creating a good corporate entity. And in order to create a good corporate entity, you have to you have to pay attention to your stakeholders. And those stakeholders are not just shareholders. They're customers, they're community members, they're employees. And there are data points that you can measure that will give you an idea of how good a company is at actually taking care of those various stakeholders. And that's one example of many where non-financial data points can actually tell you more about a company in many people's opinion than the financial data points.
And, I like to believe, because I used to work for Johnson & Johnson earlier in my career, that companies that actually try to be better to the world around them have better sustainability themselves, because they're going to create greater loyalty from their staff and greater loyalty and dedication from the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
That companies that are about just bottom line return on investment don't have the same longevity if you compare those categories.
Exactly.
You believe that also?
I absolutely believe that. And I think what's fascinating about the data discussion, and by the way, it's great that you use the word sustainability, because sustainable and responsible investing is now what some people are calling this area. Some people are calling it sustainable investing. The sustainability piece is really being, there's a firm called Sustainalytics, which publishes analytics around sustainability.
Hey, one of those on my shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Stain remover for it.
So there's a whole ecosystem around that term. And if you think about it, it's very difficult if you don't have the metrics to prove that what you just said is true. That companies that treat people better and treat their employees better and stakeholders better, that do better long term. You can't show that short term. That is not going to show up next quarter. It's not. It might show up in tail risk. Mining companies are always an example,
yeah.
and the miners go on strike or something like that can be very meaningful. Or Volkswagen is a very public example recently.
Until they got caught.
Yeah, exactly. But that can have a very meaningful one quarter effect on a stock price, say. But really what we're after in this movement, if I'm going to call it that, is data points that play out over the long term and really show themselves to be material over a longer period of time.
Told you wouldn't need your notes. I'm going to take you off track again. I have one more question before we wrap up. To me, there's a big, I was reading a lot yesterday about a food article, which blew me away, unvalidated.
Yep.
to me, there's a bigger industry in misinformation being published than accurate information. How do you get through all that stuff? Because it is, you look at the election, there's just a lot of misinformation out there in the world. There's, I once, and I'll just add to it, I once saw Walter Cronkite, if you know who he was, being interviewed at NPR, and he said the big difference between news today and news in another generation is we used to check our source, validate. He goes, now you hear a rumor, you put it on the air because you want to be the first to put it on the air. So there's a bigger industry of misinformation. How do you get through all that?
It's a very insightful question, and it's exactly something that I've been involved with and a lot of people involved with. I'll take one example. It's called the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board. You're familiar with the Financial Accounting Standards Board, FASB. This is called SASB.
But and who what funds SASB?
SASB is actually,
you got to look at the sources.
Bloomberg's on the board. You know, some people who I think are really looking at creating a standard. Mm-hmm. And the Financial Accounting Standards Board took financial accounting out of the dark ages, right? And you can argue that GAAP versus pro forma is messy anyways, but at least it's out there and there are rules. This is what certain groups are doing. And if you create those standards and people have to follow them, then you can prove, then you can create a certain level of quality to the data. And that's critical to moving this industry forward and making companies responsible in the way that they manage themselves.
William, you're the first person to come on this show in all the years we've had the show to talk about this whole topic area. It's nice.
Well, I think it's really important for people to be thinking about it in addition to companies.
Maybe
because
we can
people,
twist your arm and bring you back.
I'd love to come back and talk more.
How do people find you if they don't want to listen to you?
Yeah, my email is wkrause, wkrause at moodylynn.com, moodylynn.com. And I think the best place is actually LinkedIn. William Krause. That's a good place to get in the flow of information on what's going on in the ESG and sustainability areas and stay abreast of current developments because this industry is changing fast and it's really important long-term for the quality of corporate investment and progress in corporations managing their stakeholders.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your being on the show. Remind everyone this is Radio Entrepreneurs. We're going to take a break and we're going to twist Will's arm and try to convince him to come back regularly on this show.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Jeffrey Davis. We'll be right back after these messages.